Welcome to the Locke Associates Group series of podcasts, where you'll get to know our experts, who will take you through our legal, HR, wellbeing, and mediation services, giving you a deeper insight as to why people are our business.
I'm Paul Harvey, and welcome to the Locke Associates Group series of podcasts. Today, I'm with Roisin Kavanagh and Alex Kiernan of Locke Associates, and we'll be talking about redundancy and why it's not always a light at the end of the tunnel. But before we go into the topic, I want to just go to Alex first to just tell us briefly what you do with Locke Associates.
I'm a solicitor and partner within the Locke Associates Group, and we, as a group of companies, essentially assist and help organisations manage and look after their people. So in essence, we help with day-to-day HR issues, help with management in the office, help with any legal issues that arise in the sort of employment relationship, as well as much, much more.
Thanks, Alex. And Roisin, can I just ask you to expand on what you do, please?
I am an employment solicitor, also obviously at the Locke Associates Group. And Alex says we help with all types of employment issues for both employers and employees.
So today we're going to be talking about redundancy and why it's not always a light at the end of the tunnel. And if I can go to you, Alex, first, and just ask you to give a high-level summary, if you can, please, of what redundancy actually is.
Sure. Well, I think most people understand redundancy as effectively a scenario where there is a job that is no longer existing. That can be for a number of reasons. We have a sort of statutory definition for it, but in essence, it's usually where there is the closure of a business altogether, the closure of part of a business or a site within a business, or it can be where there is a diminished requirement within that business for an employee to do work of a particular kind. So in summary, it's when the job no longer exists.
Roisin, what support can you actually give at Locke Associates Group if you're in that situation?
There are certain steps employers must take when making employees redundant, such as warning and informing the infected employees that their positions are at risk and consulting with them before making final decisions about whether the job is redundant. We can guide employers through that process and ensure they are complying with the legislation when they're making employees redundant.
And Alex, when it comes to the consultation, how long should that consultation be? What should be within that consultation to make it a legitimate consultation?
There's two main elements, I guess, to that, to answer that. As briefly as I can, it depends on the numbers involved. So there is a piece of legislation that essentially says where you're looking at making 20 or more employees redundant within a 90-day period at one establishment, you have to follow a sort of more enhanced process and a stricter process. And depending on the numbers involved, you need to have a consultation that most often will last at least 30 days in that scenario. For the most part, most employers that we deal with, it involves less than that number, in which case there is a more, let's say, flexible system, but you still need to demonstrate that you've explained to an employee what the proposals are, why they are the way they are, and you still need to ensure that you've looked at various other options to avoid that redundancy and discuss it with them in an effective way. So in terms of timescales, it's usually going to take at least a week, and that's a real absolute minimum. I would say it's taking at least more often more than a 2-week period, but it does depend.
Okay, so there's no strict statutory ruling on it?
There is if you've got more than 20 employees. If you're planning to make redundant more than 20 employees within a 90-day period at one establishment. So there is a specific sort of piece of legislation around that scenario. But if it's one or two people that you're proposing to make redundant, then there is a more informal process of consultation that you can follow. But it's nonetheless quite an important process, because if you do that incorrectly, it can give rise to claims specifically, most often in relation to unfair dismissal.
And how effective is it to actually go that route? Obviously, in this pandemic, you pick up information about how there are so many delays in the legal pipeline that to go that route, it would take months and months.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. If you bring an employment tribunal claim, realistically, I think you're looking at least a year before that, from issue of those proceedings to the ending of those proceedings, if it goes all the way to a fully contested final hearing and it doesn't settle before then. Most often, I mean, we've got several cases, haven't we, Roisin, where just because of the backlog of COVID and the issues that have arisen in relation to that at the moment, it is a long, long process. You know, we're looking at years in some cases.
That's interesting and worrying at the same time. So, Roisin, while it may seem the most straightforward way for business to ease financial pressures in creating redundancies, but redundancy carries its own direct and hidden costs, doesn't it?
Of course. So there are the obvious costs which the employers have to pay if they're making an employee redundant, such as any accrued but untaken holiday pay. Their employees are entitled to their notice pay on termination of employment. And of course, if they have over 2 years' service, they're also entitled to a statutory redundancy payment. But the employer should also factor in other costs, such as that they're going to have to continue to pay the employee during the consultation process. And as Alex mentioned, especially with collective consultations, so consultations with 20 employees or more, those time limits, it can take quite a while to go through that process.
Can we talk about, Alex, the sort of scripts and letters that you have to produce that help manage each stage of the process? Yeah. And also, can you describe perhaps the unique position that Lock Associates Group can offer?
Of course. In order to fairly dismiss someone and to avoid or minimise the risk of a successful claim against you, you need to ensure that there's a potentially fair reason. Redundancy is a potentially fair reason, if it is the genuine reason. And you need to follow this fair process, which includes the consultation. So we spend a lot of time working with employers, making sure that they get that stage right. And the biggest aspect I would say is, as an employer, making sure you plan what you're going to do, why you think there is a potential redundancy, and plan who that's going to involve and how you're going to deal with it. There's lots of things to think about before you kick off that process, and I really recommend that that's the stage where you get in contact with a solicitor and take advice. But yeah, once we get through that stage and assist a client, we normally are helping them with actually the discussions they're then going to have with those employees. And as you can imagine, it's often the case that employees bring up issues that weren't expected. So it's sometimes we spend a time addressing those and helping clients with unexpected issues.
And Roisin, has the pandemic impacted quite severely on a workforce? Are you finding that you're really busy on the redundancy advice service at the moment?
I think it's fair to say that we have seen a lot of redundancies over the last year. Unfortunately, that's the position that lots of our clients have faced. But also we've seen a lot of employees coming to us looking for advice on similar situations that they're facing. And obviously, over the last year, the furlough scheme has been in place, which is in place until the 30th of September. But furlough is not cost neutral for the employer. So there are still costs if employees are on furlough, such as the national insurance contributions and pension costs. So even though the furlough scheme's been available, often employers still can't afford to have people left on furlough. So have needed to make long-term decisions about redundancies even over the last year.
And have you been surprised in any way by a kind of inefficiency on behalf of employers when it comes to actually going through the right procedure?
I wouldn't say surprised, because we deal with both employers and employees. And so we see both sides of the coin, if you like. And we see lots of employers get it wrong, which is why, you know, we work really hard to try and help those we work with to get it right. So it's very easy, I think, for an employer to get the process wrong when making a redundancy. And that's why having legal advice at a really early stage is really important to avoid future costs, such as claims from employees.
So Alex, can I ask if Lock Associates have actually got any kind of differentiation between you, Lock Associates, and other employment law lawyers, for example? Do you offer a kind of different sort of service that stands out from the others?
We do in several ways. Although many lawyers will say it, I do believe that we provide very sort of pragmatic, practical advice to employers. Most employers I know don't want to be lectured about the law or statutes, etc. They just want pragmatic, straightforward advice on the best way forward. But I think aside from that, we're quite different from many employment law firms, because we actually offer a whole range of services surrounding that. Although I'm a solicitor, we have a group of HR consultants who we often will use to sort of step in and assist with the actual process itself, to provide that full sort of wraparound service for employers. And on top of that, you know, we provide training, management training that goes along with it. In short, I think we do things in a different way. We provide a bespoke package for employers. And I think often with redundancies in particular, that is necessary.
And with the HR backing, that gives you that kind of differentiation, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And the reality is we work in under one roof with our HR consultants. We work very closely with them. And that just makes the whole process much more sort of fluid and easy.
And agile, a speedier response. Yeah, I can understand that. So, Roisin, can we go on to settlement agreements? And if you could kindly give me an overview.
Of course. So we advise both employers and employees on the terms of settlement agreements. But if we just go through the basics of what a settlement agreement actually is, it's a legally binding document, which when the employee signs it, they're waiving their rights to bring legal claims against their employer relating to their employment. So, for example, they're waiving claims for unfair dismissal, discrimination, not receiving their redundancy pay. And in return, the employer's paying them their contractual entitlements and usually some form of enhanced payment that comes along with signing the settlement agreement. So for the employer, there are also advantages such as the employee is signing up to perhaps enhanced confidentiality obligations, returning company property. So there's benefits for both parties.
Alex, can you describe a little bit about exits and how they result?
Redundancy is one way that an employee leaves an organisation. A settlement agreement is another way, as has just been mentioned. The real difference is redundancy, in many cases, is a sort of involuntary process. The redundancy is sort of imposed on an employee, whereas the settlement arrangement is often a sort of mutual benefit scenario where an agreement is reached and often a payment will be paid to the employee.
To avoid litigation, I suppose.
Exactly. You know, it's settling a potential claim that may exist between the parties.
So what could be the other options, Alex, apart from redundancy, that employers could get into a negotiation with the employee?
One of the questions I always ask when an employer comes to me and says, I think I've got a redundancy scenario is, okay, why do you believe that's the case? And it's very important to sort of sit back and justify to yourselves, I think, as an employer, why you think that job role no longer exists. And often it could be the case that it's not actually a redundancy, it's that there's a performance issue, for example, which needs to be dealt with in a different way. If it is a financial issue, and we've seen a lot of that over this incredibly difficult period, then there are other routes that sometimes are the better route. And that can include agreed wage reductions in some cases, and we've seen a fair bit of that over the last year with clients that we've worked with. Roisin's mentioned the furlough scheme, that's still in existence. Part of a redundancy consultation process is you need to look at, are there any other suitable alternative roles in the business? And it may be that one particular job doesn't exist, but there is another job that person could be moved into. Sometimes, and it's a more rare occasion, that you know people will take some time out, sort of like a sabbatical, and I have seen that as well. And of course, we've mentioned the settlement option. So that there is a whole range of options to look at, and it may not always be a redundancy scenario when an employer thinks it is.
That's interesting, isn't it, Roisin? Because, you know, the things that Alex has just brought up, the employer may not put those alternatives on the table. And would the employee be savvy enough to actually request those kind of alternatives?
Well, as Alex said, in order to avoid any unfair dismissal claim at the end of the process, employers do need to show that they've considered any reasonable alternative options. So that should be something that they do as part of those initial planning stages of the consultation process.
What do you think employers have learned through this pandemic period that we've been through that they can carry forward into creating a better practice with their employees?
I know everyone keeps saying it, but this has been a really unprecedented period that we've been through. And I've seen some really inventive and different ways of dealing with, most often, you know, a lack of trade and financial difficulties that many, many businesses have suffered. I like to think that we've introduced different ideas for employers to think about instead of just going down the redundancy route, and made them aware and sort of widened their eyes really to the other options that are out there to potentially retain employment where it's the right thing to do. But it's not always the right thing to do. And at the same time, you know, I've had lots of discussions with employers where they've been looking at taking certain steps, and ultimately, in my view, is if they can't see that a job role is going to have a future, they need to seriously consider going down that redundancy route. So it really depends on the scenario. But I think there's lots of employers out there that have had to deal with a lot more HR, let's say, over the last year.
And Roisin, you know, to get back to the question, the sort of topic that we're talking about, where we're saying why it's not always a light at the end of the tunnel, can we just summarise why it's not?
I think, as we've touched on, the employee isn't in control of the process. You know, it's the employer's decision to terminate the employment by reason of redundancy. And I think that can often leave employees feeling quite disgruntled. So employers do need to be careful to minimise the risk of any potential employment claims. And unfortunately, that's obviously something that we deal with quite a lot, defending those claims that employees bring if their employment's ended by reason of redundancy or another reason. But as Alex has already gone through, there are lots of other options, alternatives for employers to consider rather than redundancy, which might mean that the employee remains in the business, which are longer term planning options, which we would recommend employers consider as well.
And I guess, Alex, that it's a case of minimising disruption to the business, isn't it, through this process?
I think that it's a case of long-term strategic thinking more than anything. At the same time as employers shouldn't sort of panic and take rash decisions, some employers also need to just sort of, we see a bit of sort of burying their heads in the sand sometimes, and taking difficult decisions is a hard thing. So it's a bit of both. And I suppose I'm conscious of sort of highlighting, of course, redundancy usually isn't a light at the end of the tunnel for most employees, of course. It's a very, very difficult time. But I think what we're going to see is lots and lots of small business startups as a result of the increased redundancies that we've seen at the end of this year. And I've worked with several clients where they say to me, actually, at the time, I thought it was the worst thing in the world, but being made redundant has changed my life for the better.
In some cases, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. I think we will. I think, you know, there's always a kind of revival, isn't there? When people really reflect on what's been going on, and it's been a very emotional time for everybody, that actually there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think if we can just summarise where the key points are.
If you're an employer and you're not sure which way to turn and you feel uncomfortable about sort of a process or something that you're dealing with from a HR perspective in the workplace, then part of what we offer is an initial sort of scoping out call that we do for free to see how we can assist you. And generally speaking, I would say, look, come to us, get our input on it, and most often we can provide some real value to you.
So today I've been with Roisin Kavanagh and Alex Kiernan from Locke Associates. It's been a very interesting discussion about redundancy, why it's not always a light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to this Locke Associates Group podcast. For more information about our award-winning team and why our services are shaped to meet your business needs, please go to lockassociates.co.uk.